Welcome back to hour number two of the ESPN 1320 Insiders. Get ready for the most up-to-date sports news and talk with the ESPN 1320 Insiders.
Hour number two. That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. No Joe Brazil today. No Jesse Tapia today either. We're kicking it old school. We're making sure that our speakers are turned down so there's not an echo. There we go. I'm in Studio One. We're behind. Oh, here we go. We're behind. Drop my water bottle. I'm behind the glass again, and I don't like this.
No, it's different.
It's how we started doing this show.
Yeah, for a year plus, we did this, I think.
No, it wasn't quite a year.
Really?
But it was pretty close. And we did the show like this, and when you first started, it's like, okay, yeah, this is just how we do it. But now that we every day are sitting across from one another, this feels weird. Like our eye levels are off because I'm sitting lower than you.
Oh.
And there's glass. I don't like it.
I have to sit twisted, like, because the arm of this chair runs into the wall.
Adjust it.
Well, no, the arm is, like, there's no way to adjust the chair arm below the tabletop.
Really?
So, yeah. I guess I can twist. There's you can't a, just, a little there's bit.
Not, all right. Well, at least you got arms on your chair. I got no arms over here.
Yeah. Well, you remember they added arms to the chairs.
Yeah, just for you.
Yeah.
You kicked and screamed. You kicked engineering's door down, and you said, I demand. Do you know who I am? I demand to have arms put on my chairs.
We came in one day, and we had the arms on the chairs, and then very quickly, like when we started coming in, the chairs got switched, so I didn't have the chair with arms, and so they created another chair with arms.
I didn't realize that... I did not realize that arms on chairs meant so much to people.
When you have a bad back, it helps.
Okay.
It helps support and push up. And
I think the only thing for me is that it gives me something to do while I'm sitting.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to like fall off the chair or something.
My arms just dangling at my sides.
Dangling. What do I do with these arms?
I don't know. So I play with the microphone all the time. I'm just like, here, I'll just move the mic around, which is annoying. But
that's funny.
Anyways, it's fine. I'm going to start saying anyways and really make sure I'm saying anyways because somebody brought it up in the chatty house. That's not a word. So I'm going to keep saying it. Specifically, when I'm saying a word wrong, like tertiary, when I was using that, when I meant peripheral, fine. That's the wrong word. Salute. That's absolutely correct. Anyways, not a word, but you know what? It's what I say. Tough. Anyways. Pete Carroll said something insane about the Raiders running back room, and we'll talk more Jonathan Kuminga. We'll talk more Kings. We'll talk some Hall of Fame game, some red-hot Hall of Fame game action last night in Canton, Ohio. Pete Carroll said this about the Raiders running back room. Now, keep in mind, the Raiders just spent the number 6 overall pick on Boise State running back and Heisman runner-up Ashton Jeanty. Pete Carroll says this when he was asked about the Raiders running back room. Again, the Raiders last season were a historically bad running team, so they're hoping to revamp that running game under new head coach Pete Carroll this year. Here's what Pete Carroll said about his running back room that we all assumed would be spearheaded by Ashton Jeanty. Quote, I'm really happy with the running back group. The variety of the styles that guys have, I love. We have different kinds of makeups of guys. Zamir White kind of stands alone. He's the biggest and strongest of the group, and he really runs tough. Sincere McCormick, who didn't get a lot of play time last year, did really well when he did, and he's shown he's got a real knack, got really, really good quick feet that are real natural to the position.
Hmm.
Nothing on the number 6 overall pick running back? You think Zamir White stands out in your running back room? As the biggest and strongest and toughest runner? What?
It makes me sad because a lot of times over the last, like, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years in Seattle, Pete Carroll, like, did a back by committee. Like, you have some games where, you know, like for fantasy-wise, he's just messing with the position now. Like, I was thinking about, like, going all in on Jeanty in my draft. Because, like, hey, look, there's a lot of things. I mean, we talked to Faraz about him last week, and he just had so many positives about, you know, the Chip Kelly offense and just, like, the way that they use running backs and Carroll's system. And it's like, oh, man, you know, that might be a guy you go after. But now it's like, hey, yeah, we're not talking about him. We're talking about all these other guys that could potentially have an impact.
But even if, and again, I don't want to overreact. It's August 1st.
Yeah.
Reacting to the information that we currently have, maybe they get to the regular season and Pete Carroll right now is trying to gas up some dudes so they can get them traded and Ashton Gentry is just going to take over and this isn't going to be a conversation moving forward. But it seems to me when you're going to use the sixth overall pick on a running back in the modern NFL, that there needs, and you're the Raiders, who needed some offensive playmakers to be sure.
Yep.
If that running back is not very clearly far and away the best running back in your running back room, and you're in a scenario where that player is now in a committee style setting, I have questions about, we talked about value going into the draft. Are you going to use the number six overall pick on a running back in the modern NFL? And you go, well, it's Pete Carroll. They're going to run the ball a lot. Ashton Gentry is really freaking good. Generational type running back prospect. So yeah, you got to make that pick. You got to get the potential superstar. You got to get that playmaker in the building. All right, I'm with that. I'm cool with that. There cannot be a scenario where it's a running back by committee.
No,
it can't be a scenario. It is. It can't be a scenario where he's not far and away your best running back.
Yeah, I mean the NFL is just like all the other sports leagues. They tend to be a copycat league, right? And when a player goes crazy, like Saquon did last year, you're like, oh no, we need to get one of those. We need that guy. And so for a couple of years here, we've gone through, you know, like very few first round pick running backs. And then all of a sudden, you know, Gentry pops in and they're like, okay, we're all in. You got to play the dude. Like, I mean, if you're not playing him, like what exactly? I mean, it just feels like Raiders of old.
Okay. I want to,
and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be because this is a whole new group.
Well, this is, but this is where I don't. It would be. Like you're right.
Yeah.
But I don't want to put that. I don't want to put that there just yet. This is just a deeply concerning thing to see Pete Carroll saying.
Yeah.
Hey, I would hope that Ashton Gentry is that dude. I like Zamir White though. Like Zamir White's not a bad player, but. You drafted running back since.
Yeah. Yeah.
Better be the best dude in your running back room.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Cooper Flagg is a really, really nice player. But we really like Dwight Powell. You know, he's probably gonna start the season as our starting power forward.
Except in that quote, and again, that quote was via the SI Raiders site. He didn't even mention Ashton Gentry.
Yeah. That's weird.
Maybe I'm missing something. Like I very well could have missed something in here. But let's go to that Cooper Flagg scenario where Jason Kidd gets asked, hey, how about that group of young players you got, huh? And he's like, well, Derek Lively, tearing it up right now. Max Christie, just outstanding. Max Christie might be the best young player we have.
Oh.
Like, wait. I'm sorry.
Are you just nodding? And maybe that's what it is. Maybe he just didn't include Gentry because he's way up here and he's comparing the other guys.
Maybe.
And you're like, all right.
Maybe. And maybe he said something about Gentry earlier in the press conference that did not get mentioned. Cool. All right. That could have happened. But in a vacuum, which is where I saw this quote, it doesn't look great.
Mm.
That's all. I'm rooting for Pete Carroll and the Raiders, and I'm rooting for Ashton Gentry to be really good.
Okay.
Mostly because I need the hand-wringing to stop when a team drafts a running back.
Yeah.
The Lions drafted Jahmyr Gibbs, I think, what was it, 12th?
Something like that.
12th overall? And there was this freak out from the NFL commentariat on the internet, like, oh my God, you can't take that player value. Ah, he's awesome. He's really good.
Awesome.
Get good players in your building. And so I would like Zamir White, but I would like Ashton Gentry to be really good so we can stop freaking out every time a team drafts a running back before the 100th pick.
Yeah.
Because it's always like, oh, find a guy in the sixth round, but it's just as good.
And the crazy thing is the Niners always draft a running back in that third and fourth round, and all of them are bad. All of them are busts.
Just without fail.
Just like, that's where running backs go now. It's like, okay, well then why do you keep getting bad ones?
Yeah.
In the third round. It's okay to get a bad third round running back when there's five taken in the first round and another three taken in the second and another eight taken in the early third. But when you're taking one of the best running backs available and you can't get that one right, that's weird.
That's tough. And with the Niners and the running back thing, just since we're on that, you're using third round picks on running backs and then not giving them opportunities. Not letting them try and figure it out.
No.
Using third round picks on running backs, you're going, yeah, hey, Trey Sermon, third round pick, what's up? Good work. You have to learn how to play special teams first.
Yeah.
Well, man, what?
Same with wide receivers. How many wide receivers did they botch there in the third and fourth rounds?
Danny Gray.
Yep.
Dante Pettis was a second round pick.
Oh, yeah.
Debo was a second round pick, too, though.
Yeah, they hit there. And where'd they get? Ayuk is a.
Ayuk, they traded first. Up in the first.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. But I don't know. Just hope Ashton Gentry works out for the Raiders.
There we go.
That's where that's at. The NFC East, while we're bopping around the NFL here with the Hall of Fame game was last night. Preseason football is underway.
Mm-hmm.
Terry McLaurin has officially requested a trade, the wide receiver from the Washington Commanders.
Yep.
We'll start there because we've got some Micah Parsons stuff to talk about too. But with Terry McLaurin, here's just kind of where I'm at. He turns 30 this year. He's going to want a contract probably in the $30 million a year range. The 49ers could afford that. It's not. They can fit that contract in if they want it to kick in this year. They can do so next year. They could figure it out with Terry McLaurin. But I don't know that he's the level of player in their offense at 30 years old that you're looking at and going, yeah, hey, we want to commit 4 and 120 to this guy.
Yeah, I've always really liked McLaurin as a player.
Yeah, really, really good player.
But he's like a 1,000 to 1,100 yard receiver. Like, if you're going to pay that kind of money,
mm-hmm.
he's got to be a 1,300 to 1,500 yard receiver. And I know last year he had like 13 touchdowns. He was a touchdown machine.
Yeah.
But, like, it's got to be more. And it's got to be consistent. I know he's had, like, every year in his career, he didn't hit 1,000 yards in his rookie season, but he was close. He was over 900. But then it's like 11,000, 11. You know, he might have one year where he hit 1,200 yards. But it's just, again, I like him, but at almost 30, you don't like him that much.
Yeah, he turns 30 on September 15th.
Yeah.
So he will be 30 for virtually all this season. And I know that you can make the argument, okay, the quarterback play hasn't been good. He's been available 17 games in each of the last 4 years. He's been a Pro Bowler twice. He was a second team All Pro last year.
Yeah.
I get, like, I'm not trying to say he's a bad player, but when you're talking 49ers, because viewing this through that scope, he would help them this year for sure. But they barely want to pay Juwan Jennings.
Oh, yeah.
Who may be out the door next year. They've still got to figure out what's going on with Brandon Ayuk. If you're going to bring in a wide receiver, if you're going to trade assets and then pay a wide receiver, it has to be a player who's not 30 years old, because this is what they're trying to avoid. This is the exact type of contract they're trying to avoid right now.
Mm-hmm.
That 4 years, $120 million, however much guaranteed, and he's good this year, but then next year he kind of falls off, and all of a sudden you're sitting here in 2027 with this bloated contract on an ineffective player.
Mm-hmm.
This is the exact kind of contract they're trying to avoid. So I would be shocked if the 49ers really kick tires on Terry McLaurin. Now, if the Raiders wanted to, where you don't really have, like, Brock Bowers is awesome. Jacoby Myers is good, but definitely wide receiver two level for me. I wouldn't hate that to give Geno Smith another weapon. I think he and Terry McLaurin would be really good together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they had that. Well, I know they don't have the same financial commitments moving forward as San Francisco does. And so if you want to make that move and bring in a legit, I think, number one receiver into your receiver room, I think you could. And I think it would actively help them this year.
Well, that, and it also feels like this late in the season, we're, you know, this close to the season, we're talking about, like, what are they going to get? A fourth round pick?
Oh, at best.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like it might be high, like a fourth or fifth round pick for McLaurin. Mm-hmm. And that's tough. Like, like I would give that up, but I'm not going to pay all that money.
Yeah.
Once you make the move. So that's the tough thing with that.
The Micah Parsons thing is insane. We'll get to that. We'll talk about the Hall of Fame game. We'll get more into Jonathan Kuminga as well here on the Insiders. We're sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Excuse me. This is ESPN 1320 Sacramento Sports Center. This is the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. James Hamm's over there. I'm Kyle Madsen. No Joe Brazil today. Shout out to Micah Parsons, man. He has officially requested a trade from the Dallas Cowboys. So this is reporting from Diana Rossini at The Athletic. Among the key issues, because the reporting is that Micah Parsons and Jerry Jones were talking. Jones was not talking with Parsons' agent. They agreed to some kind of deal. Parsons took that deal to his agent, and his agent went, "We're actually not doing this."
Oh.
And when he tried to talk to Jerry Jones, Jerry Jones wouldn't talk to him.
Oh.
So the Cowboys are no longer communicating with Micah Parsons' representation because they're holding Parsons to the handshake deal that he agreed to in this conversation with Jerry Jones. That led Micah Parsons to request a trade officially today. Diana Rossini's initial reporting on it used some very, very dramatic language. Relationship has deteriorated to the point where the star pass rusher is considering drastic measures, which could include a trade request or even a declaration that he is severing his relationship with the team. Which I love that idea. It's like Michael Scott declaring bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Micah Parsons just standing in the middle of the Cowboys facility and is like, "I declare I have severed my relationship from the team." It's like, oh my God, Micah Parsons is a free agent now. He declared it.
Yeah.
But he's officially requested a trade. According to Diana Rossini, again at The Athletic, Parsons spoke directly with Jones over multiple days in the spring. Team believed that those conversations were negotiations and that it had a deal, but Parsons believed the talks were just conversations and wanted his agent to handle the negotiations. When his agent attempted to start negotiations, the Cowboys declined to engage with him and told the pass rusher that they believed they already had a deal. Now the team is refusing to engage with Parsons' agent at all, creating a tense standoff amid increasing friction. That led to Micah Parsons tweeting out today a 3-page note from his iPhone.
Oh, yeah.
It is a novel with the caption, "Thank you, Dallas."
Yeah, this is wild. Like, here's the line. "I no longer want to be held to closed-door negotiations without my agent present." What? Like, well, so that's the standard that they have?
So that's what it sounds like. I don't know if this was in Jerry Jones' office or out at the practice field.
Yeah.
But it sounded like they were just kind of having these conversations, and Parsons thought they were just talking because, of course, you're not negotiating an actual contract without your agent present. And then Cowboys went, "Oh, nope, deal, no takebacks, no takebacks. You agreed to a deal, so we're not going to negotiate anymore. Sign this deal now."
Oh.
And Parsons like, "What? We weren't negotiating.
Yeah,
that's my agent's job."
That's really strange, because that's like, you know, like you can't interview a minor without a parent or guardian there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you seriously should not be able to negotiate a contract with your people there without his lawyer present, without his representation present.
Yeah, like,
yeah, that's crazy.
Did Jerry Jones say, "Hey, we really want you here," and Micah said, "Man, I really want to be here, you know?" And Jerry said, "Here's X years, this many dollars, this much guaranteed." And Parsons said, "Man, I want to play here. I want to be here. I want to get a deal done."
Mm-hmm.
And did Jones go, "Oh, great, those are the contract figures"? Because there's so much more that goes into contract negotiations than "Hey, how about 4 years, $120 million, and $45 million guaranteed?" Okay, let me go. How about 4 years, $125 million, $55 million guaranteed? No, can't do that. Like, there's other minutiae. There's so many things that go into these contracts.
Yeah.
There are certain things that are standard, but it's more than just dollars, cents, and years.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, look, an NFL/NBA contract, they're boilerplate, right? Which mm-hmm. means that there's a contract that you start with that has all of the language built mm-hmm. out, and then you go into specific segments of right. the contract and you adjust things.
Right.
When you're talking about a superstar level contract, a superstar level player, like, that contract is going to be much different than a rookie 6th round pick contract. So mm-hmm. again, the boilerplate, just the basic contract, has to change. There's going to be all kinds of things written in here.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if it will include crazy things like private jets or like stipends for clothing. Like, there are all kinds of things that are put into
yeah.
contracts, especially higher end contracts that you work out. And like, for this to be like, to just say, oh, like, yeah, Mr. Jones and Micah Parsons, they sat in a room and they had a conversation.
They hammered it out.
Yeah, and Parsons like explains, he's like, he met with Jerry Jones, but for something else.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about leadership of the team. And then during that conversation, it shifted to his contract and what the parameters would be. And so they had some back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then he walked out and said, yeah, okay, I'll have my agent, you know, contact you and we can finish this thing up. And then it just went south. Like, the agent called and they're like, yeah, the deal's already done. Like, Mike already like did the deal. And they're like, wait, what? Like, no, that's not the way this works. It's like, well, yeah, the deal got done.
He didn't put pen on paper.
Nope.
That's not how this goes at all then.
Yeah.
I don't blame Micah Parsons one bit. And from the, here's where I'm at with the, somebody in the chatty house asked, should the 49ers trade for him? There should be 31 NFL teams on the phone right now.
Oh, yeah.
Micah Parsons, for me, is the caliber of player. He's not even old either. I feel like he's, Micah Parsons is...
I guess he's 26?
He is, nailed it. 26 years old. 26 years old. Four-time Pro Bowler in four seasons, three-time All-Pro, two-time first-team All-Pro, one-time second-team All-Pro. He was the Defensive Rookie of the Year as a rookie, as well as second in Defensive Player of the Year voting. He was second in Defensive Player of the Year voting in his second year, as well as a top-10 MVP finisher. He finished third in Defensive Player of the Year voting in 2023, and he was a Pro Bowler last year and was 17th in DPOY voting. But he still had 12 sacks in 13 games for a not awesome Dallas team. This is the kind of player for me that you blow up all your team building.
Oh, yeah.
You change course with what you're doing. If the 49ers or the Raiders, because they both have high-priced defensive ends already,
mm-hmm.
if they have some kind of plan of, okay, yeah, and again, we talk about roadmaps, right?
Yep.
What's Jerry Reynolds say? If you got a 5-year plan, you got no plan. You have to be looking out. Okay, this is kind of where the direction we want to go over the next 5 years.
Yeah.
But if player X that you were expecting to pay gets hurt, you divert and go down a different path. If this guy starts overperforming, and oh gosh, okay, now we got to pay this guy. You got to redo the calculus. Okay, now you're going to change this path again. You divert your path to go get Micah Parsons. Flat out.
Oh yeah.
There's no. I'm putting however many first-round picks on the table. I am paying him top-of-market money and figuring out what I got to do contractually to make sure that I'm keeping that guy in my building. He's a game-changing player.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what is it that you think that it would take? Is it like 3 first-round picks? Is it 2 first-round picks? Is it a first and a second?
Oh, it's multiple firsts. Okay. Because you're... Like I said, you've probably got 31 teams on the phone right now.
Oh, yeah.
Micah Parsons is thinking about requesting a trade.
Yeah.
All right, well, here, we'll get on the phone. And now he's actually requesting a trade. And not that when you're writing a short novel about this situation, this isn't, oh, he unfollowed the Cowboys on Instagram. And oh, he pulled all his Cowboys photos off of Instagram. Oh, and now he's requested a trade through Adam Schefter. This is a guy, he's pissed.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe this is all a leverage play. Maybe this is all, he knows he's in the right, so he's going to grab all this leverage that he can so he can try and get a deal done. But it wouldn't shock me at all, given the nature of how this went down, with Jerry Jones effectively trying to bamboozle him into some contract before Parsons takes it to his agent, which he pays to negotiate contracts.
Yep.
That might be something that deteriorates that relationship. We've talked about this with Jonathan Kuminga. Jonathan Kuminga just doesn't trust the Warriors anymore.
Oh, yeah.
The Warriors could sit Jonathan Kuminga down right now and say, hey, here's 3-90. You can have your no trade clause, and we promise you're going to start. Like, I don't know that I trust that I'm going to start. I don't know that I'm going to trust anything here. I think I'm done. Like, that's how that... It wouldn't shock me at all if Micah Parsons is there with the Cowboys. Like, I'm not negotiating with you guys anymore.
Yeah.
I don't want to be part of whatever the hell this is. I'm out. And so I'm taking this much more seriously than the Terry McLaurin trade request. Obviously, if he gets traded, he wouldn't mind.
Yep.
But that feels like pressure on Washington to be like, hey, pay me. Who else are you going to pay? You got this young quarterback. We have a great rapport. Pay me.
Yep.
This from Micah Parsons feels like, I'm all done with this. You've got Jerry Jones saying like, oh, he's actually, how valuable is he? He missed 6 games, even though he only missed 4. Like, he's already been out there doing that. You're already messing with his money, and he's been out of practice, and now you're doing this. I think Micah Parsons is legitimately done, so I think you're going to get a real bidding war, because I think every single team is looking at Micah Parsons. There's not a single football team in the NFL that's looking at Micah Parsons going, you know what? We think we get worse.
Yeah.
If we have to make a deal for Micah Parsons, don't love it. You could be the Carolina Panthers.
Yep.
Like, hey, what do you got going on over there for Micah? What do you want?
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a bidding war. I think it's going to take multiple first round picks. I think he's going to get the richest contract in NFL history. I can't say enough good things about Micah Parsons as a football player.
Could you see a world in which you can fit both Bosa and him into your salary structure?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's the thing that makes it difficult is, all right, well, now you're probably not when Deometer Lenore in a couple years is going, hey, I'm horribly underpaid.
Yeah.
You're probably trading him. And you're probably getting off Brandon Ayuk sooner than you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
And if... let's say Malik Mustafa becomes an all-pro. You know what? He's probably not sticking around. You have to be really, really confident that you're going to be hitting on your draft picks over the next couple of years. You got to be really confident that, all right, D. Winters is on year 3. He's going to be extension eligible this offseason. If he's your starting Will linebacker and he's good, you got to be comfortable being like, I can't pay him.
Yeah.
But again, a lot of those problems get negated if you have Micah Parsons on the opposite side of Nick Bosa. The same goes for the Raiders. You got Micah Parsons on the opposite side of Max Crosby. Yeah, to hell with the linebacking core. Can you find some guys who are mid with your secondary? Like, God, the baseline of competence for your secondary drops to the basement if you have two pass rushers of that ilk. Whether you're talking Raiders with Max Crosby or Niners with Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
You talk about like ripple effects and what it does to it. It just makes it, how do you stop that? How do you block that? Yeah, situations where you line them up on the same side. What do you do? And Micah Parsons can play off the ball. Like this is one of those things I think on this program, we try really hard to be realistic with the financials of a situation, right? Like, there's a reason, in this Kuminga thing, so much of it is, God, the salary's got to match and you got to move some money around. They're not going to be in the tax. And that's why it's not just like, just do it. Just do it and figure it out later.
Yeah.
The Micah Parsons deal for me is very much a just do it and figure it out later.
Yeah.
The number of players that are this caliber that just become available, it would be like, not apples to apples, but Victor Wembanyama says, hey, you know what? I want out of San Antonio. Giannis Antetokounmpo says, you know what? I want out of Milwaukee. Every team is going, all right, stop the presses. Let's rally the troops and see how we can go get that player. But there's not that many dudes like that in the NBA. Theoretically, Luka would have been like that. If Nico Harrison let it be. But there's what, maybe half a dozen guys like that in the NBA, maybe less.
Yeah.
I think that number, the non-quarterback edition, because I think at quarterback, you're Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow. I think all those guys, if one of them wanted out, it's the same deal. But I think non-quarterback edition, there's, I've not even three or four guys, I would think off the top of my head.
Yeah, this kind of feels like in the 90s when Charles Haley became available.
Mm.
49ers lost Haley and he went to the Cowboys.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a guy who, again, you know, third defensive player of the year, had 16 sacks and had kind of a down year at 7. And then, boom, he's a Cowboy. And you're like, oh, that was probably a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even then, he was, you know, 27 going on 28. This is a 26-year-old dude. It's a young, young defensive player.
Yeah.
Build around forever.
Yeah, man. And I... That's it. This is a foundational piece. This isn't you can plug this player in and that would help your defense. No, this is you are adding a foundational piece to your defense.
Yeah.
At the most important defensive position for San Francisco, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch equate an effective pass rusher to a good quarterback in terms of importance.
Of course.
Being able to affect the quarterback is the number one thing. When you've seen Patrick Mahomes lose Super Bowls, it's because the Bucs got after his ass and it's because the Eagles got after his ass. When you've mm-hmm. seen Tom Brady lose Super Bowls, it's because the Giants got after his ass. Like that is when you can get home with your defensive line, you drop 7 into coverage, you're affecting the quarterback, and now there's 7 players that he's got to navigate while the pocket's collapsing. It's just football gets really hard at that point.
Yep.
So I'm usually on the side of, well, okay, pump the brakes. So Terry McLaurin, people are like, oh, you got to go get it. Okay, well, relax. Micah Parsons, I'm like, go get him.
Yeah.
What do you got to do? How many firsts? Yeah.
Drop everything.
Yeah, give up your first. I don't care.
Yeah.
Down with the picks. A franchise-changing player. Those guys just don't hit the market super often.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's that upset, yeah, go get him, man.
All in.
Did you tap into the Hall of Fame game at all last night? It's okay if you didn't.
I did not.
Yeah, it was second screen for me. Like I said, I was had it on. Like, all right, there's football on. That's cool. Like, that's just a nice, like I said, it's like a warm hug. Like, cool. There's just the machinations. It's Mike Tirico on NBC with Chris Collinsworth. They're like, all right, hey, this is just a nice, it's on in the background. I got a bunch of work to do. This is cool. And then Trey Lance started cooking. And here's the deal, man. I joked on Twitter. Is Trey Lance back? It's the Hall of Fame game. It's which is below preseason for me in terms of, because you want to talk about nobody playing, nobody's playing. But he looked more comfortable than I think he's ever looked before. He made a couple of really nice touch passes. He dropped in a dime down the field on a deep throw. You see the talent. Like, it's so clear that the talent is there. And that was really fun. The conversation, again, some in some cases, I think, tongue-in-cheek, and I think in other cases very seriously, are like, the 49ers messed up. The 49ers should not have gotten rid of Trey Lance. Look at what he's doing under Jim Harbaugh. This is the player. First of all, it's the Hall of Fame game. Let's relax.
Yeah.
We have a larger sample size of Trey Lance looking very uncomfortable playing quarterback. But again, I'm rooting for the guy. I hope that what we saw last night, he carries over into the preseason. I hope he wins the backup job. And if he winds up playing for Justin Herbert at any point, I hope he steps in and he plays great. The question for me is not whether the 49ers messed up with Trey Lance, though.
Yeah.
I think that's the wrong conversation. Because if you rewind, maybe you're a Trey Lance believer. Maybe you're a person who's like, nope, he just needs to play. He just needs to play. It's hard to argue with the results for San Francisco. Since 2022 when Brock Purdy took over.
Yeah.
But maybe this is me zagging. But when I watched the Chargers last night and I see Trey Lance look awesome and I see the Chargers winning 34-7 or whatever again, not like the score matters. And people go, oh, they messed up with Trey Lance. No, they messed up with Jim Harbaugh. Can we keep it a stack? can we rewind the clock that far? Because if you want to go back 3 years and you want to ignore all the contacts that went into the Trey Lance thing, you want to ignore all the stuff that he regressed as a rookie and Jimmy Garoppolo started And then he didn't look much better in year two, and then he got hurt. And then in year three, he went into a quarterback battle with Sam Darnold and couldn't win that quarterback battle, and ends up getting traded to Dallas, where he couldn't beat out Cooper Rush for the backup job, because that's the other thing. You got to remember in Dallas that Trey Lance was supposed to be QB2, and he was not.
Yeah.
So this is now two teams. So now he's on a third team where I'm hoping it works out for him. But I'm not going to look at this. If Trey Lance winds up being awesome, I have a really hard time looking at it like, oh my God, what were they thinking? Because if you go back to that time, it made sense. You could say they should have kept him as their third quarterback, but guess what? He's not going to get nearly the amount of reps and the amount of work to be a good to be the player that I still think he can be. You see the talent. He's only 25.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Like that's nuts. He has thrown Steve Palazzolo from the 33rd team, I believe that's where he's at now, tweeted this last night. The Trey Lance has thrown 462 passes total since the start of his college career. So from his first college game ever to the season finale last year, he's thrown 462 passes. There were 16 players who threw more passes than that last year. Just last year. That's insane. So again, I think if you want to go, if you want to be the person who's like, I need to have a hot take about the Hall of Fame game, I need something to say, and you know what, the 49ers messed up. No, the Jim Harbaugh is that dude. Jim Harbaugh's a really good coach.
Yeah, I agree.
And the 49ers punted him because the owner just, I didn't like him. I didn't like him personally. Couldn't work with the guy. And I choose Trent Baalke instead.
Would you think of how many phone calls we'd get from TC about how they should fire Jim Harbaugh?
Oh, it'd be so many.
Yeah, so many.
So that's a thing. And frankly, again, when you look at, what are you going to do, you know? When you look at how things have gone with Kyle Shanahan, I think you can make the same argument. Like, well, they found a really good coach. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't think the 49ers necessarily, when you're talking about things they've messed up, there are 500 things I think you say they messed up before you get to Jim Harbaugh and Trey Lance. But I think if you're getting off of last night's game, and sorry for ranting for so long here, I think if you're getting off of last night's game, that's the one. Like, well, I think you'd probably say you'd rather have Jim Harbaugh, right?
Yeah.
Anyways.
Maybe.
That's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. The handoff with D'Lo and KC coming up next right here on the Insiders. It's ESPN 1320, Sacramento Sports Center.
Oh, am I supposed
no,
to do
no,
it?
No, we're good. No, we're good.
Okay, I wasn't sure. I'm sorry.
No, we're good. My buttons don't work over here.
Okay.
So,
got a little nervous. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I'm sitting on this side. Maybe I'm supposed to say something.
I had just taken a drink of water, and I was trying to think if I was going to acknowledge that the voice guy is getting the day off today.
Oh.
And then I said, oh, I need to say that Joe is not with us today. But then I'm like, no, I don't. I don't have to say any of that.
Nope.
And it's time for the handoff.
You know,
James, do we have anything to tell the people?
Yeah, you know, we do have to say that you could win two single day passes to Aftershock at Discovery Park, October 2nd through 5th, courtesy of Danny Weimer Presents. Just enter online at ESPN1320.com contest page.
Hell yeah.
Hey, Hammer being a radio guy is awesome.
It's the best.
Like, this is, I love this.
It's the best.
Pretty soon, Ham's going to be pushing buttons.
No.
And,
ooh.
Yeah. I don't push buttons, except for the one red one, in case I say something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Everybody knows where the dumb button is.
At least I know where it is, that's all.
You have to acknowledge that you know where the dumb button is.
That's my favorite thing that we have to do, is dumb button training.
Yeah.
Acknowledge me.
Here's the training. You get a sheet that says, this is how the dumb button works.
Yep.
I acknowledge that I know how to use the dumb button, and the training for it is, hey, you see that red button right there? Yeah, you push that. If someone says a no-no word, you push that button, and you go, great, and you sign your name.
There it is.
It's easy.
That's it.
It's light work.
I learned that too, and it was like, if you're on a call and somebody's like going off, that dumb button will give you an opportunity to hang up on them.
Yep. That's facts.
There you go.
Oh, I just hang up on him.
Well, you can do that too.
I know you had to do all that. Do you guys want to talk about Jonathan Kuminga, Micah Parsons, or Terry McLaurin? I'll get the other choice here.
Yesterday, Kyle had a proclamation that I'm done talking about Jonathan Kuminga.
Nah.
And then this morning happened.
They keep dragging me back in.
So I was like, until there's new news. And then Sam Amick said, all right, bet. Salute to the Athletic, Sam Amick.
Salute to the Hall of Famer, Mark Spears, who reported a lot of that same stuff on this show yesterday. Particularly the Malik Monk part.
He texted you back?
He did.
Oh, I didn't know he texted you back.
No idea. Yeah. No, he did. Right around, like I say, what, 1:15?
Yeah.
1:15, he was like, hey, my bad. I'm on my way to the airport. And then followed up. That's one text, and hit us back. I could jump on right now real quick. And so we were throwing the break, and I'm like, hey, call Mark. Call Mark right now.
He's going to answer.
And so we got him on the phone on his way to LAX, and, you know, he gave his thoughts on what's happening, and he told us the Malik Monk part of this. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, in fact, have anything to do with Devin Carter or Dario Saric. Like, and given, you know, the math that we got, which is something that we didn't get from Mark Spears, and the first time we didn't get it from ESPN either, is the first time we've gotten, allegedly, sources close to Sam Amick, is the first time we've gotten numbers on behalf of the Sacramento Kings. So what was it, 363?
363.
3-63. So, average annual value's about the same. It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I like the way that Sam laid this out. No one wants to go with the qualifying offer thing.
Right.
The Warriors may find themselves in a similar situation that the Kings are. I think James is of the belief. I'm absolutely of the belief that the Sacramento Kings are attempting to make other signings. I absolutely believe Russell Westbrook is one of them. I just think you have to do other things before you do that. Mm-hmm. And the Jonathan Kuminga thing seems to hinge a lot on, or a trade for Malik Monk seems to ride on whether you can move Moses Moody or Buddy Hield.
Whether you want to move those guys.
Or that. Absolutely could be that also.
Yeah, it's all complicated. That's what we keep saying. Like, there's too many moving pieces, and unless somebody's, like, extremely motivated to get it done, which I think the Kings are, I think Kuminga's people are, but I don't think the Warriors really are. They're not super motivated. That's why we see this, hard line, yeah, we think he'll be here type deal. And I just don't know that that's the case. So I think we're getting closer to a completion, but I'm not going to make a bold proclamation like we had a couple of weeks ago, because this thing just keeps, like, twisting and turning, and we just keep getting, like, little bits of information here and there that add to the whole picture.
The thing that I would continue to say, I asked this the other day, and I would ask the Warriors again, what do you really want your season to be about? I thought this whole thing was about Steph Curry, trying to get him a ring, all this other stuff. Is that what it's about, or is it about winning a tug of war with Jonathan Kuminga? Like, I think they've completely lost sight of what this is supposed to be. They're too busy trying to get the best deal for Kuminga. I thought the focus was a championship for Steph Curry.
So, talked about this a little bit yesterday on our program. Do not forget winning on the court. Forget the best deal for Joe Lacob doesn't want to be wrong. And I think there's, and somebody said that to me.
Are you suggesting he's a meddling owner?
Well, yes.
We seem to be real selective about when we use that term.
Yeah.
But it seems to be there is one guy in that organization that really, really wants to hold on to Jonathan Kuminga.
Yeah, that's been an issue. He wanted James Wiseman too.
He wanted Draymond Green too.
Oh.
There's one guy that.
Hey, actually,
the buck stops with him.
I think that's a Steph Curry thing.
I don't think that it is.
I very much think it is.
I think Steph.
Unless you know something I don't.
I think Steph was indifferent. I think that was Draymond and Joe.
I think,
a conversation.
Yep, I think Steph was like, "Hey, do what you got to do," and Joe was like, "Nope."
And Draymond was like, please, no.
I didn't ask Steph Curry that, by the way. So I could absolutely be wrong.
I didn't either.
KC had the opportunity to over All-Star Weekend, but didn't take it.
That's crazy.
So, you know, it's whatever because he didn't have his phone charger.
You let Steph borrow the PJ?
No. I mean, I don't this is the guy that, don't turn this on me. No, he's the one that had a PJ. Why are coming you, back to Sacramento? No,
you're deflecting. You were invited to Steph Curry's party and you didn't go because you didn't have your phone charger.
You big time Steph Curry.
That was just like he big time Patrick Willis.
Those were two L's. Oh. Those were two L's, and I didn't big time Patrick Willis.
Patrick Willis, I was asked trying to not take to a picture with this man.
He didn't know who I
and
was.
He said no.
He thought I was with Jason Verrett, and I had to be like, nah, I didn't say all this, but I was like, nah, I'm not with them. Go ahead, take a picture with your boy.
Would you like to know the worst part of this?
Not really, but go ahead.
He was wearing a D'Lo and Casey sweatshirt.
Oh.
It was L. But see, wait a minute. I wish you'd tell the whole story. He's not telling the whole story. I'm going to tell you right now. So I was talking to Jason Verrett before the game. Like, you know how people be on the end zone. I'm talking to Jason Verrett, and we're talking. Matter of fact, it was the day.
This is a word salad right now.
This is crazy. This is a lot of words.
Jaden Daniels, the play against the Bears. It was the same day as that. So I was on my phone. I said, yo, did you see what happened in this game? I'm showing Jason Verrett. It looks like we're cool, but he just met me 10 seconds ago. Mm-hmm. So Patrick Willis comes up, very nice. He's dapping everybody up. It looks like I'm with Jason Verrett. So when he's like, hey, let's all take a picture, he's thinking I'm like Jason's boy. And I was like, nah, you guys take it because I'm not with them. I'm not in this circle here.
This has nothing to do with nothing. But just to put just to put some closure on this, you are in a court of law right now. Yes or no? Did Patrick Willis ask to take a picture with you? Sir, I remind you are under oath. Did Patrick Willis
got the draws?
It's a yes or no question, Kenny.
GTD!
Point was, I didn't ask Steph Curry. But these are things that we've heard.
Sure.
And Joe Lacob now seems to have his name attached to Jonathan Kuminga. And that's, I think when this all started, that was just kind of a whisper. Mm-hmm. Now it's really freaking loud. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, Joe Lacob wins. Like, when push comes to shove, Joe Lacob will win. The one caveat to this is Jonathan Kuminga has say in this. Draymond Green wanted to be a Golden State Warrior. If he can go directly to Joe Lacob and get his contract negotiated, fine. Mm-hmm. That doesn't work in the Jonathan Kuminga situation. Mm-hmm. And Kuminga's now posting on Instagram, always bet on yourself, different things like that. So now we're in this, well, we're cutting off sign and trade talks. Well, we're going to bet on my, so everybody's just got it laid out on the table like, okay, well, we'll just wait to see what happens when October 1st gets here.
And then there are all kinds of rumors that Kuminga was in town yesterday, but I don't know if that's true or not.
He was at the Arden Fair Mall.
Oh, man, be careful. Yeah.
Took life into his life. That's what he meant. That's actually what he meant when he said bet on yourself. He's like, I'm going to go to the Arden Fair Mall and be okay.
That's betting on yourself right there.
I'm going to bet on myself. And
that's betting on a lot of things.
And then I'm going to head down to Sky River.
Hey, there you go.
But I want to know what you guys think. What Warriors, Kyle, I ask you, hey, have you guys lost sight of what you're supposed to be doing? Aren't you supposed to be getting a team together, whether I think it's capable, you're capable of it or not, doesn't matter. Aren't you supposed to be getting a team together that can help this iconic player get another championship? What are you doing getting in this tit for tat in this contest with this guy about a contract that you don't even want? You don't even want him. Or messing around with the Kings trying to get an unconditional pick. Like, what, have you lost sight of what you're supposed to be doing?
No. I think the answer would be that Devin Carter, who you, Kenny, says is not good at basketball, doesn't help them win a title, and neither does Dario Saric, and neither does two second-round picks.
But it doesn't seem like that's who we're talking about.
No, but no, conversation. Hang on. Let me get there. So, okay, Malik Monk. Okay, I see the vision. They could have really used Malik when Steph got hurt against the Timberwolves in the playoffs last year. But then Joe's like, that first round pick's not enough. I need unprotected so I can feel like we won this deal. Now, when you say they don't want him, I think the thought process there is, well, if we can work out this deal, and now we have this trade chip. And okay, we don't like the deals we're getting now, but if we can sign him to this deal and at the trade deadline, there's some team that just needs a scorer, needs a wing, we can get something more for him at the deadline.
Yeah, but you don't get that deal.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't get that. There's a couple of things with what I just said and, mm-hmm. and how you responded. Number one, you don't get that if Jonathan Kuminga is on the qualifying offer.
Right.
That's off the table. Right. So that's number one about trying to get this championship. I thought that's what this was all about, getting mm-hmm. the championship for Steph Curry. That's off the table if you don't take this deal or any other deal.
This two-year $45 million deal or whatever.
The other thing is, it's not even that. This is my point. They're so focused on this trade and what they're supposed to. What happened to going to get Al Horford? What happened to going? You can still do that later. Mm-hmm. But you're the one team in the league who has done nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this whole thing was about getting him a championship. And you're so busy messing with the Kings and Kuminga. What are you doing?
I don't know that it is about getting Steph a championship for everybody in that building.
Now we're talking.
Okay. So who's not about this? Because I think the most important people are you looked at me. Is it Joe Lacob? Joe Lacob's the one. Okay.
It feels that way.
Okay.
Like it just based on how it feels like Joe Lacob in 2020 was the year they were god awful. And then 21 was the year they lost in the first playing game to the Lakers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do I have that?
Yeah, LeBron saw three rims.
Oh yeah, well, that's crazy. I don't know where Jesse keeps his flags around here. But
Kyle, let me help you out for a sec.
Oh, that was crazy. Three rims. Is Kyle crazy. That is
kind of nuts.
For the listeners out there, you're listening to KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento. ESPN 1320, Sacramento sports leader, always
the radio guy.
The Odyssey app.
It is amazing.
I think Joe Lacob thought that after that 21 season, like, okay, this is a wrap. Now I'm going to build my team. I'm going to be the guy. It's going to be James Wiseman. Oh, and then we got Jonathan Kuminga in here. We got Moses Moody in here. This is the next. And then they won a title in 22, and Steph is still awesome. And it was like, uh-oh.
And
I think he is now.
To me, that ruined the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah.
Because my opinion, and I think we talked about this yesterday or the day before, my opinion is now they think they can do that.
Yes.
There is no scenario where the Golden State Warriors were the best team in the league that year. It doesn't matter. They won the championship. That's all that matters. Yeah. There is no scenario where they were the best team going into the next season.
Yeah.
Like, they won one of the most improbable titles I think we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Steph Curry is on the team, so it kind of it cushions that a little bit.
You got a full season of playoff run at Otto Porter.
From a basketball perspective, that basketball team was not it. Mm-hmm. I think they look at, why can't we do it?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Mm-hmm. And so now they think they can mix and match, and you're gonna go. Isn't Al Horford the oldest player in the league at this point? Mm-hmm. And you're gonna sign him to what I already think is the oldest team in the league.
I think the Clippers are the oldest team, and I think LeBron's the oldest player. Is Chris Paul older than LeBron?
No,
Chris Paul might be older. Chris Paul is 40, right?
Well, yeah, but isn't LeBron 41?
LeBron turned 40 in December.
Yeah.
Chris Paul is born.
I think Chris Paul is 40.
Chris Paul is 40. He's born on May 6th, so that means he'll turn 41 on May 6th. He'll turn 41.
So he's younger
during the
by
season. Yeah,
7 months.
He's younger. Okay. Al Horford is at least 52. Hang on.
I think the point stands, though. Kyle and I were discussing
this
earlier.
Al Horford, 39 years old.
Malik Monk makes them a better team. Like, and I could make. I think Malik Monk makes them a better team. Whether they have Kuminga or not, like, that's a good trade for them, like, as far as players. Now, I understand salary cap implications, but Malik Monk on that team, when you've got a 37-year-old Steph Curry who's going to miss 15 to 20 games like he has,
mm-hmm.
like, he makes you a solid team, and you already had a player like him, and it worked just fine. Jordan Poole helped them, and for me, Malik Monk is a better version, a scaled down but better version of Jordan Poole. And you know how it works. So I am confused. Like, I get the salary cap situation. I get that it might mean you have to trade Buddy Hield. But if you had your choice between Buddy Hield and Malik Monk, I'll take Malik Monk every day of the week.
You're 100% correct. Here's the thing that I would argue if I was Mike Dunleavy Jr., mm-hmm. or if I was acting sensibly as Mike Dunleavy Jr. Malik Monk does make us better. He is the best offer we've gotten right now, but it doesn't get us any closer to where we're trying to go. That is not their problem. Their problem is size, a lack of size and athleticism. Mm-hmm. And to a certain degree, I'm not saying Pods is as good as Malik Monk, but you've got that position kind of covered already. So, you don't have a center. You don't have a power forward.
I'm going to argue two different points from two completely different stances.
Sick.
I could use Buddy and perhaps Moses Moody as a way to bolster those parts of.
Maybe.
That's the other argument. I might not be able to move these guys. Like the way that this market looks right now, the way that the trade market has looked, the way that the, you know, these apron teams are operating. Like I think there's Cleveland is in the second apron. Utah and Brooklyn are under the cap. Everybody else is over the cap. And then you've got, I think, five or six teams at the first apron. Mm-hmm. So one move sends you to a different tier with a different tier of problems.
Mm-hmm.
So going, if they make this move for Malik Monk, then you go out there, you try to move Buddy Hield or Moses Moody or a collection, whatever. Yeah, that's a lot easier said than done right now.
Totally.
I think the Nets would take Moody, like, straight up. Because the Nets are the one team that's under the cap. I think they would say, okay, yeah, we'll take him. Because he's a young player. They need scorers. He would make sense in their system. And you get to see if he develops into something better. They wouldn't take Buddy in the same way. And that's because Buddy's, like, somewhere between 32 and 46.
Oh, my goodness.
We're not sure which... How old he is?
We'll never know.
No.
Great American mystery.
That's tough. I think they're also still stuck a little bit on this commitment to winning with Steph and also understanding that this window is probably 2 or 3 years wide. And so much of what they've been trying to do is dedicating their resources to making sure that the cupboard's not empty when Steph leaves. And so if you're trading Kuminga, now here's the other thing. I think they have these handshake deals with D'Anthony Melton and Al Horford and Seth Curry or whoever else. And they went, hey, this might take a minute. Like, we got you. We're all set. This deal is not going to impact you. We just got to figure this out first. And so they don't really see any rush on it. Mm-hmm. Where maybe they do. They go, all right, we'll ask for a top 10 protected and Malik. But we're going to sit on this for a while and see if they'll come back with something different.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Yeah, and I was going to say to both of you guys' point, you don't need Al Horford on day one of the NBA season. You know what I mean? I don't even think Melton coming off an ACL injury, you don't necessarily need him to be there day one either.
May not have him, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, to counterpoint what I've been saying, you don't need these guys in the building today. You know what I mean? Especially Horford at that age.
No, the end of September is when you need them in the building, like for training camp.
Right.
So Golden State can just sit here.
Yeah, and this situation will be resolved by then one way or another.
Yeah.
Because you can't sit on this qualifying offer forever. We can't pretend like, oh, we're just in this stalemate for eternity. Like, this will, by the time, you know, you want to get Al Horford, D'Anthony, those guys in at least to get into your program, to get into some work, like, you're good.
Mm-hmm.
But you said something a second ago that the Steph Curry window, the Warriors being committed to the Steph Curry window, there's nothing wrong with that. You have a player like Steph Curry. If I was Mike Dunleavy or Joe Legge, I got a player like Steph Curry on my team. Yeah, I'm going to do everything I can to get another title while he's wearing my uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do everything I can. And I'm not... If that means, you know, pushing back the rebuild a few years, if that means, you know, the Steph Curry post-retirement is worse, then I'm doing it. Because the longer one thing that I might be thinking about if I'm probably more Joe Lacob than Mike Dunleavy is I don't want the Kobe Bryant situation with Golden State, with Steph Curry.
What do you mean?
I don't want Kobe doing a farewell tour where his team sucks. I don't want Kobe scoring. I don't want Steph scoring 60 in his final game and the Warriors getting their 12th win of the season. If I can, and granted, none of that dampered the Kobe Bryant retirement tour.
No.
None of it. It was every single minute was fantastic. But if I can hold on to this a little bit longer and keep my team competitive with Steph Curry, I'm going to do it.
But here's the issue with that. I'm with you. And I think there's been a lot of people since 2022, it was like, oh, the window's still there. You need to push all your chips in. But they didn't. You're going, oh, he's getting James Wiseman and Jonathan Kuminga. And you got to hold on to him because the second, the Warriors never said second timeline, but that's what it was. Got this second timeline that we're trying to cultivate. And that didn't work. But now they've put themselves in a spot where they can't push all their chips in to try and make the team better because they don't have any more chips to push in. So they're stuck. They didn't go the rebuild route, but they also didn't commit to, hey, we're just going to unload all of our picks, all of our assets, Kuminga, Wiseman, whatever it is, and we're going to make sure that we are maximizing the talent around Steph Curry for the next 3 or 4 years. They didn't do that. But they also didn't go, hey, Steph, you want to be traded somewhere because we're going to start this rebuild thing now. They didn't do that either. So they stuck themselves on mid.
Here's the other thing that maybe is unfair. Maybe I'm being unfair here. And like you always say, and I 100% agree, the only thing that matters is you got that championship in 22. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. Mm-hmm. Ain't no asterisk, ain't no nothing. That banner goes in the rafters like every other one.
Someone should ask Daryl Morey, but it's
oh,
fine.
Man, that guy.
About stuff he
hey, that's bro, crazy.
Bro, you cannot have this conversation without a ring on your finger. Sit your ass down.
The banner goes up just like the other ones.
Yeah.
But I believe that messed a lot of things up, like you said before, mm-hmm. because the reality of the situation is you are a program outside of 2022 that hasn't gotten past the second round in like 6 years. And you're talking about, like, I believe right now you're talking about a fifth championship for Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Outside of some timely injuries from about 3 or 4 other teams in this conference, you don't have a shot at a championship.
Yep.
You don't. And that's where they think, to your point earlier, they think, well, we'll just do it again.
They didn't have a shot then either.
You guys aren't a championship team.
I think deep down, though, I think that's what they present publicly. I think, and Steph has said this, you just want to be competitive. You want to play meaningful basketball. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I think they can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're in that spot to be 7-8 seed. You win a play-in game and make the first round, and okay, you got a puncher's chance to win a round. But that's kind of it. But I think that's probably enough at this point. Mm-hmm. So I think that what we're seeing with Golden State is less like, oh, we got to make sure we're doing the perfect thing. And it's more, hey, we're going to see if we can get something else out of this. Because James said it, you need people in the building late September. Mm-hmm. And that deadline for the qualifying offer is October 1st.
Yep.
So, all right, we're just going to sit here and this reporting is going to be annoying. And you guys are going to talk about it on ESPN 1320. But we're going to twiddle our thumbs and hope that somebody blows us away with a different offer.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either, but it's the same. But it's there's no reason to do the thing. It's like De'Aaron Fox signing his extension, right? We always said, well, of course, you don't want to do it now because you can just wait and you can make more money in the future.
Future being 2 days from today, by the way.
Well, so that's
allegedly.
What...
talk about.
So that's I think what Golden State's doing is they're like, well, we could just do it now. We probably won't get a better offer by waiting, but there's no harm in waiting. So
yeah,
we're just gonna do it.
So mm-hmm. that's the thing is you can wait.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Kuminga, you can wait because the deadline is this could go on for months.
Mm-hmm.
We could be talking about week one of the NFL. And oh, by the way, the Jonathan Kuminga situation is still
unresolved.
Oh, for
God's sakes. Oh, my God. You're so right.
That's just, week one. I think we could be talking
week
four.
I think we will be.
49ers are 3-1 here. Jonathan Kuminga situation is still unresolved.
The thing that always goes through my mind in this situation is when was the Karl Anthony Towns, Julius Randle trade? Wasn't that October?
The day before the season started?
Yeah, it was
right when training camp started.
It was you know when I know it was is remember the Timberwolves and Knicks played in the preseason and Dante got into it with the coach. got in with Brunson's dad. And it just happened like a week before that.
If I got it right, this is just a quick search. I believe it was October 2nd.
Yeah. we could be going to that. I mean, I think qualifying offers and stuff like that makes it difficult for that. But, yeah, it could go on for a while.
If we're talking Michael Williams, Rookie of the Year, in the same show we're talking about Jonathan Kuminga, I'm going to be so mad.
Kyle, if we're talking NFL trade deadline in the same show that we're talking Kuminga, that'd be crazy.
It's content, Kyle.
Should the Raiders be buyers or sellers? Plus, Jonathan Kuminga's qualifying offer.
Jonathan Kuminga would be nice coming out, rushing off the edge.
We're on the verge of Jonathan Kuminga's qualifying offer. Will he sign it? Will he not?
What is that, like Halloween? Or they pushed it back, didn't they?
The NFL trade deadline?
Yeah. It's some November something now, I think.
Wild.
Man, I remember that's when Jimmy got traded. He got traded like on Halloween or a couple days before or something like that.
What do you guys got coming up on D'Lo and Casey besides Jonathan Kuminga?
Well, that. Jonathan Kuminga not actually joining the show.
Ah.
But sure, quite a bit of talk about Jonathan Kuminga. I forgot. I wrote Kyle into the show. Kyle's actually with us all day.
I made him stay last week because I was like, bro. You got
to
stay.
We took the handoff to 27, and he's like, hey.
I was like, hey, bro. Hey.
Like, all right, man.
You want full Jerry Jones negotiation?
To be fair, I asked. I was like, you want me to stick around?
My man had a tough week. We've got we'll break down the Mikal Bridges deal a little bit and why that worked and why I think the New York Knicks are still facing some issues. There's actually a few more things I want to talk to you about, more specifically about the NFL and the San Francisco 49ers than as much the Sacramento Kings. Eddie Gonzalez scheduled to be with us in the 2 o'clock hour. How real is this LeBron Europe thing? We'll talk about that also. There's
sorry, I was a little busy this morning. My bad. But NBA, yeah. We got to – I think some things are happening with NBA in Europe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There definitely appears to be, but does one have something to do with the other? Like, I'm not really sure. But
I don't think so.
We'll try to get to the bottom of it.
Very good. D'Lo and KC coming up next for James Hamm and Joe Brazil. I'm Kyle Madsen. We're the Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. Don't touch that dial though. Drink water.
Don't touch that dial.
Don't touch that dial. that's the. It's we'll be back Monday at 10 a.m. Drink water. Be nice to people. D'Lo and KC starts right.